Lawrence Prospera is a community-driven, nonprofit organization committed to our mission of strengthening the individuals and families of Lawrence, Massachusetts through the development of thriving neighborhoods. CISU presents Hola, Honest Opinions with the Lawrence Attitude.
What do you see as some of the good things happening in the city of Lawrence right now? Or perhaps in the near future?
Right now, I definitely enjoy seeing the younger people getting involved. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. I think they should definitely have their feet in that room.
Yes.
But also, like I saw, I have it there. I'm not going to search for it. I gave it to a friend of mine recently. Also, you know, again, they're very smart kids. They're very smart young men and women. But also, you know, give time. Give yourself time.
Yes.
Give yourself time, observe, and get some experience. Because I'm sorry, you could read all the books in the world. But until you have that experience, you really can't put two and two together.
That's true.
And no disrespect to anyone, but it's, I think we put so much credit on all of them. They have this degree. I says, I get that. But if I owned a company and all you had was your degree and no work experience, and this guy had work experience with the degree, I'm hiring him.
Yes.
Because
no,
now
I
could tell what they've done. They could have made mistakes and learned from them. You really have zero experience.
Books so, like that they call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. No, we all have them. There's nothing wrong. Education is a great thing to have. It's a plus. But that combined with experience make you even better.
I agree.
It's easy to quote books and read articles and say all this stuff unless you've really been there. It's tough to do. So again, have your feet in the room, establish your voice, because I was like that as a young age, but that came from my dad and my mom and how they were, and we got involved, you know, we were doing things. You know, speaking in public, I remember the former chief ran into my brother and I did something with him and I spoke, and he's like, hey, your brother's a pretty good public speaker. And my brother's like, yeah, we used to do that. We were like 10, you know, it wasn't a big deal. They gave us a microphone. You had to go speak.
Entertain the family. Or,
yeah, you know, yeah. I was dancing on stage when Melix Bonilla was playing the saxophone back in the
there
day in Scorpio. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's important for them to get involved. You know, the future is theirs, but also learn as you go along. We're not against you. You know, we're trying to offer you where our errors were, you know, to try to tell you, well, that's not a good idea because A, B, and C, because we've seen it. And those before us did it again. We were all stubborn as younger people. Sometimes we were like, we knew better.
It really comes with age.
It comes with age, and you start to learn. You're like, you know, be careful. You know, things tend to repeat themselves, and it's gonna happen. So just be careful. Change is always good, but drastic change can hurt. You know, be careful of that. And I think the involvement from the youth is a big thing. I like to see it. I've met many young people that are really into the politics, and again, we could disagree. I guarantee I disagree with most of the people in the city. I have friends that are like, no, we're on two sides of the tracks when it comes to politics. But that's okay.
Exactly.
I don't hate you. You don't hate me. We can disagree on certain things and move on.
We can agree to disagree.
That's all.
To agree.
Yeah, that's all. It's just, yes. I think, again, young people, be careful of that. Don't lose friends and family over a disagreement over politics. Because at the end of the day, that doesn't matter.
That's right.
That, you know, it doesn't matter. It's one of those, people are losing friends. People have stopped talking to each other because they disagree. Because politics divides us, no.
And they vote in that emotional aspect, and I believe they should vote educatedly. Like they should not.
Don't vote on emotion.
Educatedly, no. They should educate themselves when voting. You have that. That's your civil
duty.
You say
that, and we go back to the police thing. Well, that's one of the topics. But how many other things haven't been used during elections and stuff like that to play to our emotions?
That's right.
It's easy, and I'm not. You know, I don't get angry that fast. I've always been a well-tempered person.
Yeah.
But they're very smart. You know, they pay researchers how to, you know, approach people.
Definitely.
Oh, no, we got to get this because this young crowd, they're voters now. Mm-hmm. You know, again, they want to lower the age to 16.
Imagine that. OMG.
Let's be real. Let's be honest. Well, they're very smart. Yes, they are very smart. But I voted at 18. I found my registration card from Lawrence City Hall the other day. I didn't really know. Who do I ask? I'm my parents. And I'm not saying these kids don't know.
Yeah.
But I think as time goes on, you kind of figure things out. 18 is a good age. 16, you know, I don't know. They can't, you know, we talk about frontal lobe development, this and that. And how, so it's an easy audience. Not all, but a lot of them are easy because that development's not there. Let me play to their emotions and I can get them to vote for me.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Just be
that's
smart.
Young
people are smart. They're very smart to catch those things. Mm-hmm. I think somebody just has to, and I just said it out loud, be aware.
Be aware
of how they're trying to play you, because again, some people just take your vote and run with it and see you later and forget your cause.
Someone said to me that back in the days when his parents used to vote, and this is just a random guy that I was pumping my gas to, and he was just watching Fox News, and he was going on a rant, but he's like, you know, my mom, when she used to vote back in the days, was for me, I'm voting for my son's future, I'm voting for my family's future. I think I was like, oh wow, that's true, like, you know, because elections have consequences, right? I'm quoting something that Obama said, and they do. Elections have consequences, and I think this year we can see that, you know, even with the other president.
And I get people, like my own family, everybody that's like, even people I know closely that wanted the other guy out, voted for this guy, but now they're unhappy with this guy. Well, you get, you know, well, he was like, I'm just saying, the other guy wasn't, you know, as appealing at all. You know,
he was just not a politician. But you also know, like, Biden, like, and I say, this is when I say to people, do your research. Look at the history of these people, you know, like.
But again, it's a machine. Oh, it's a machine, and they will say everything they need to get you.
Yeah.
And everything they said, people want it. Again, we talked earlier before we went live, right, about people want to be told what, you know, what they want to hear all the time. And I think we need to relearn that also. I like when people disagree with me. I enjoy that.
I like that. Me too.
And
me too.
I like that people challenge what I say because it just makes me think a little more. And can I be swayed at times? Absolutely.
That's
but we have to have a good, intelligent base. Don't start screaming. Don't start yelling just because you're emotional. You know, tell me what exactly it is. And I'll be like, okay, you know what? I could see that. But if you're yelling at me, I'm not going to see that.
That's right.
I'm not going to see your side. I'm not going to get that perspective. So, you know, we have to relearn that it's okay to disagree.
Exactly. I think that's a very good point.
You know, people always like, I know people personally. They're like, oh. You're one of those. I'm like, yeah, I am. And automatically, you don't want me sitting at your table. But I want you at my table. So again, if I'm constantly surrounded with people that think exactly like me, then I'm boring.
Yeah, yes.
We're all boring because
there's
no diversity at my table. We're all alike.
Yeah.
no diversity of thought here.
No, I get it. And I think you have a clear point there, a very interesting point that we should be able to hear other people's arguments and not be emotionally attached or automatically, you know, especially when it comes to politics. Like, when did that go? Like, now I like, some people are losing their jobs over politics. It's like, it's unbelievable.
It's bad. It's definitely divided us, and it's sad to see that.
Very
because
much.
We're bigger than that in this country.
And some of these policies that put a lot of people that are now, you know, were voted for Biden, if they look in his early, he's been in Congress for a long time.
Too long.
You know what I mean? Term limits. Term limits.
Term
we
limits.
Need term limits.
You know, and again, there's always memes. It's about the reality, like you said, look at it because these are the people that today they tell you, I got the solution, but you've been there 50 years. What have you done? I mean, if you have the solution now, like he said something about ending.
What have you been waiting for?
He said something about ending systemic racism. I'm like, all right, so he's been there for 50 years. Let's see if he figures it out. We're a year in. I'm like, has he ended it? I don't know.
No, he's instigating it more, but that's my observation.
But it's easy. Like, they're, you know, they're, again.
Oh, and that was the mask. So you have the mask or you don't have the mask. You've been vaccinated. The division between the vaccinated and non-vaccinated is getting scary.
Well, it's, you know what it is? It's Denzel Washington said it best. He had a quick interview, and they asked him about what he felt about everything. And I always respect how this guy answers because he's not quick to just choose a side automatically just because he's a black man or just because he's very, you know, smart. How can I say? Not smart. I keep using that word so much. But he's very tactful in how he addresses it. And he's like, you know, so he says something to the, like, if I remember correctly, was, you know, You either have too much information or not enough, or something about the media. It was addressed to the media,
exactly,
basically saying, you know what you're talking
about?
And he's like, now it's all about getting it out fast. It doesn't matter if it's true.
If it's true or not.
Just put it out. Who could put out the no? Like before, journalism was research and boom. Then when you put it forward, it was 100%.
Ooh, yeah.
Now it's like, let's put this plaster on every social media, every media network
wants to do it
right away. Mm-hmm. And I read this also somewhere when it came to the police issues, was it doesn't matter when the facts come out later that prove that that was wrong, that what they said was wrong, the American psyche has already been convinced that the officer was wrong.
Yes.
You could bring out all the facts, all the evidence later and say, no, this is what happened. They do not care at that point. The American psyche has already been
Yeah.
Corrupted.
And they're
done.
Scary.
They're set in that. Yeah.
That's very scary. Very scary. What are some of the areas that areas within the city of Lawrence that continues to struggle in terms of mental health, homelessness, substance abuse, addiction, or any other concerns that you see in the community when you're out there patrolling it or in your personal life?
I don't patrol as much these days because I'm more with training. I run the SSY, so I'm not doing that as often. But just even driving around the city and hearing it from fellow brother and sister officers, you know, the homelessness issue is just a tough one to tackle. It is a very difficult thing to tackle. We could get sent somewhere to remove, you know, take down the tent city, and they move somewhere else. You know, most recently they were in front of the church over on Franklin Street.
Ooh, I've seen that.
And they just, it's a tough one to tackle. I mean, even Boston now is trying to resolve their issue, right? But that's something that I think we're going to see for a long time because there's no overnight solution to it. Some of the people in those situations kind of don't follow through. Like, there are services that kind of go out and try to reach out to them and try to help them away, you know, find a way out mm-hmm. of the street and into something. But they just circle around. And obviously, the addiction. I saw somebody recently, and she's awesome. I mean, she's always, even back then when we used to arrest her all the time, you know, she was always respectful. You know, she sees me, you know, hey, and she's like, hey, you don't change. And I'm like, what are you doing? She just looks at me. She knows. She's still out there, and it's been years. It's been at least 20 years that I remember, and it's sad because she can't escape that. The addiction thing is another big thing. Our department has we collaborate with Lawrence Methuen Community Coalition, mm-hmm. other agencies that provide these services, so they have this help. It's the heroin epidemic. I forget what it was. I haven't been to the meetings in a while. But we kind of get together, mm-hmm. and when we have any overdoses, you know, mm-hmm. that our officers are all issued Narcan now. So, you know, we have it on scene. A lot of officers have saved people's lives with that.
Like, you have more than one Narcan?
No, every officer is issued two.
Okay.
Okay. Every officer has two, and our officers have used it.
Yeah.
Like, plenty of times, and they've saved people. Like, the Narcan's amazing.
This is the other
thing. But we bring it to the table. You know, a lot of agencies are bound by certain HIPAA laws and SNAP, but with us, it's, hey, this is a person that basically died this weekend. And the officer used, you know,
Narcan, yeah.
4 milligrams of Narcan, whatever, and brought them back. This is a crisis situation. They overdosed. So what can we do? And a lot of these agencies have really stepped forward in expediting, getting them a bed somewhere, getting the treatment they need, yeah. getting them out of there before it happens again. And they're not as lucky to get saved like that.
Yeah, a lot of officers have expressed, even when I was in the police academy, about how many times do you use Narcan? And you know, we're talking about New York City. This is always the extreme where they rescue a person 14 times. And how many times do you have to use a Narcan on this person for them to get it? And I used to be like, well, they're sick. Yes. Until we don't understand that. And also, until we don't understand, I've done some research with the cartels and how that whole operation goes, but they said that last year we had the highest numbers of fentanyl overdoses, which is also a danger for you guys because you get exposed to that. That's it. Like, you know, you either are going to pass out or not make it. So I don't think people understand the danger of that particular drug.
And again, the people that are using have some serious things going on. They're not thinking straight to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, and my brother, my oldest brother is a recovering addict, and he's always kind of, back when I was on the street and working late at night, and I'd run across people, and him and I look a lot alike. Yeah. So people look at me and be like, hey, he was like, yeah, it's my brother. I was like, oh, he's one of my counselors. Because, you know, he's been a recovering addict.
Yeah.
Oh, he's your counselor. I call my brother like at 11 at night. I'm like, I got so-and-so here.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah, well, tell him I'm not signing his paper for court, like, because they were out in the street looking and they're messing around.
Yeah, my brother, yeah.
He was a good counselor, but he's very strict and very tough because he comes from that world.
Tough love,
he understands that world,
yeah.
You know, and I used to attend some meetings where everybody, you know, all due respect to their educational backgrounds and all that. But I was like, is anybody in here a recovering addict, like somebody who's used? No. I says, I think we should bring those people to these meetings.
Right.
Because I'm sorry, as much as I don't know what it's like.
That's right.
Because I was never an addict.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's like. And I think they, being recovering addicts and wanting to help end this issue, can help us. And how do we approach? Or what is it, you know? They know the mannerisms. They know every little detail. My brother used to tell me all sorts of things to be like, yeah, this is when they're doing this, this is this. When they tell you this, it's this.
Yeah.
And also, I mentioned this years ago at a meeting also, was there's all sorts of programs for the users, but we need to find a way to empower families. Because, listen, I remember my brother was using it. He'd come around and they'd ask for money, and you always know what it was for, and you give it to them. And after a while, it's like, I remember at one point, it's like, I'm not giving you money. You know, you want food, I'll feed you. But you kind of got to cut that off. That's a very difficult thing to do for a mother.
Then you worry about
imagine a mother. You're not gonna say no to your son or daughter that you see suffering.
That's right.
So how do we empower the mother to be strong enough to kind of help this problem?
Yeah.
Because it breaks your heart to see your child there, but you're not gonna say no to them. It's hard to say no.
Yeah, and with this, you know, recreational marijuana, and I see it here where our youth are starting to use at a very early age, especially through, you know, going through puberty.
They don't know the damage it causes them. You know, I love all the science. The science, well, the science also says you affect your frontal lobe development. You start smoking weed too young.
It is proven.
It's proven, but nobody wants to hear the science that goes against them wanting to do something.
Mm-hmm.
There's science for everything.
I have to tell you, though, I have stocks that I have invested in marijuana. But I don't believe in the youth using it,
no,
but that's a gateway drug.
Yeah, they're too young.
And we're going to see this problem not get better. I think it's going to get worse before we can get better.
And a lot of people, and again, another debate I have with people, like, it is. Oh, it's not a gateway drug. Well, it is for some people. I says my brother says differently.
Mm-hmm.
I says, but other people, maybe, I know people that broke their back. And they were given OxyContins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they became
addicted.
Yes. You know?
Yep.
So there are other ways, you know, the overprescribing. You know, I always say when I got my septum surgery, they gave me like 40 Vicodins. I never touched one of them.
Yeah.
I didn't need it. But they just prescribed 40 Vicodins.
Yeah.
Here you go. I was like, those things sat there. I'm like, I'm not touching
this. You didn't get addicted to them.
No, I didn't need it. There was no pain. There was nothing I needed it for.
Yeah.
They should say, oh, call us back if you need it. For now,
that's
take Motrin.
Right.
Because say I was that person and I had some type of addictive trait.
You already had it in your system, you know, saying that you never know. There are these people that are, like, already were born with it in the system. And I tell you that. These, I rescued some of these children. I removed some of these children that were born positive. And I'm telling you, you know, the worst thing you can do is see a baby that was a newborn in the ICU withdrawing from opiates. You know, it's the worst. Well, one of the worst things, I'm sure you've seen really bad things as well, but that destroys that child's life forever, permanently.
I had to have that conversation with my oldest son, you know, and again, it's out there. It's become such a norm because it's become recreational. And I'm like, okay, it's fine. That's your choice. You know, if you're an adult, whatever. But I remember saying this to a friend of mine who I used to call a pothead, because he was a lot. He cut back on it, and he understood. And I saw him at a function once, and he goes, you know, he's like, Marco, it's like you told me that time. He says, I was letting it control me. Now, I get people use it for this, for depression, for this and that, for medicinal uses. I get that. Alcohol was used that way, too. Now, if I have to go home every day and dive into a bottle, that's excessive.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to go home, and again, these are my opinions, my personal opinion is, if I have to go home every day and light up a marijuana joint because I just can't function without it, I don't know. You know, what is exactly my condition? Is it just... So you got to be careful with that, because
we
can't allow external things to control us. We can't hide things away. Some people, you know, how do they get out of that dark area then?
Uh-huh.
Let me just drink myself. Once I'm drunk, I'll forget things, right? So be careful with that. And there are other ways, this therapy
of course,
that you could go to. You could go see, you know, a psychologist or somebody that could help you through those,
mm-hmm.
That trauma that you may have, or something that you're trying to kind of just numb up.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, all the alcohol, the marijuana, it all wears off.
That's right.
And we have to come back to our reality, whatever that may be for you. There are other solutions. You know, again, therapy is a big thing. It's not as taboo as it once was. Go get some and talk to somebody.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
It's important.
Or teaching our children how to cope with uncomfortable situations. I guess nowadays we don't know how to do that anymore.
Because we've changed the way we parent. We want to. I saw this thing on Bill Maher once, and the guy wrote a book about it. It used to be like the term used to be. It was something about kids going to college and falling into depression right away, because they don't know how to deal being alone, like with not mommy and daddy there holding their hands.
Especially social media now.
Yeah. So it went. Bill Maher said it's like it's no longer helicopter parenting where we're just hovering around our kids. Now the guy coined it bulldozer parenting, where now parents basically bulldoze every obstacle out of that path, so their kids encounter no obstacles. Now the minute their kid hits a wall, it's panic time.
Mm-hmm.
because they have no coping skills. Mm-hmm. And we thought we were helping our children by making things extremely easy for them.
Yes.
I mean, we do. As parents, you want their life to be better than yours. But you have to let them fall and scrape their knees sometimes. Yeah. And they learn, you know. I still deal with it. My oldest, you know, he's in college. And he has a certain way he responds to things. I'm like, bud, you know, take a breath, relax. We'll get through it. It's no big deal.
That's right.
You know, and he gets it. It's just there's a different generation. They have different needs.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful and not bulldozing for our kids. We watch them. We're always going to hover around them and be like, yeah, I want to make sure my kid's good. But when we're taking every obstacle out of their path, are we helping them? And again, coping skills are lacking.
Oh, yeah.
So,
critical thinking, you know?
Yeah.
It's problem resolutions, how to, you know, deal with it. And I think the addiction with media, that's another topic that will just, oh, my God.
Technology is tough.
It is very tough.
I saw a thing on education a long time ago, and education around the world, and they showed classrooms. And I always do this. In Japan, was it Japan? One of the Asian countries, Japan possibly, but they were basically, the teacher comes in, puts a problem on the board, walks out. Students have to figure it out. There's no explanation.
Because they teach them to thinking.
Yes.
Yes. How to use your little brain.
And then they showed up a classroom in America. Mm-hmm. Here I am. I'm the student. I'm figuring it out. I raise my hand. The teacher comes over.
Mm-hmm.
She begins to explain. But then I can't figure it out. Then it shows the teacher. This is actual footage. Taking the pencil and doing the work. Basically showing him how to do it right.
I don't.
No, I know. But that's very common in our culture,
yes.
Right? Where over there, it's like, no, you try to figure it out. Put an answer there for me, and then I'm going to come back, and we're going to figure it out together.
That's what I tell them, and I said to them, I'm not going to be in there when you're taking the exam, so you have to figure it out. I'm like, helping me, and I tell them, me helping you to figure it out is not helping you, you know what I mean?
I'm glad
and
I was
they
raised
get
the way
it. They
I was.
Get it.
And I try to pass that on to my kids, or even something as simple as laundry. You know, people may not think it's a big deal, but I'm like, I've been doing my laundry since I was 12 years old.
Wow, okay.
I did the same thing with my kids, and I basically told them, if you have no clothes to wear, whose fault is it? It is not my fault.
Yeah.
And my kids do their own laundry. And I'm glad. Because, again,
and it teaches
you're busy.
Your
parents are busy.
That's right.
I don't have to do my kids' laundry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Yeah.
My mom stopped doing it for me. If I had dirty clothes, that was on me. So it's one of those. That's something simple that you could just be like, no, I'm not doing that anymore.
That's right.
I'll cook for you until I teach you to cook.
That's right. That's
but it's one of those. It's very simple. I brought them in. I set up the machine. I put little stickers where they need to.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you're on your own.
That's it. I like it.
So,
and you helped them a lot in that.
That worked for me. So I figured, let me try it. Because I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. I think I had a good upbringing. I used their style with a little bit of my flavor. And
I love it.
So
love
far,
it.
Thank God, so good. You know, we're giving it a shot, right? Not perfect, but it works.
And it works both ways. Yeah. That's a very good way of looking at it. So we're almost going to wrap it up here. So why are programs like CSU important to you?
CSU offers that opportunity it may exist, or some similar opportunities may exist in other places, but in the situation we have with some of the youth, where they're in a tough situation, the peer pressure, the neighborhoods, you know, it's like the gang stuff going
gangs,
on.
I was just
going to
say,
it's this need, you know, to want to belong to something. And it's not always, like, I've met some of these kids' parents, and they're working people.
Mm-hmm.
They're good people. It's not like they these people came here to make a better lives for themselves. And unfortunately, they're working so much. You have people with 2-3 jobs that the kids are pretty much on their own. This happens more often than not.
Yes.
And, you know, again, sometimes parents that do work through 2-3 jobs, they have somebody who watches over the kids, who keeps an eye on them. But a lot of times, these kids may raise themselves, and it's not their fault. It's not their parents' fault, because they're trying to make ends meet. But this offers a great opportunity. Again, some, you know, I always say this when I argue this with my educator friends, is, you know, all we push is college, college, college. College is not for everyone.
That's right.
It's important, but offer a trade. Some
on
kids,
the avenue.
I mean, some kids may run their own business if they go into plumbing or electricity or electrical, you know, carpentry.
And we need them.
Yeah,
we need
well,
plumbers.
It's
need
lacking,
electricians.
Right? So, you know, we say the whole, you know, pay back, forgive student loans, and it's the same people
that's,
screaming forgive student loans. You're the same ones that basically only gave them that option, is to go into that debt. You could have given them other options. I'm just saying. That's just my take on it. I went to a trade school.
I agree.
I attended college also, so it's one of those best of both worlds, right?
Yeah.
But some kids may not thrive, you know, in a school environment, but they'll thrive here, you know, smaller. It's more one-on-one type deal. I mean, some of our teachers are overwhelmed. They have, you know, 30 kids in a class. It's tough. It's very difficult to do that job. You know, it 30 kids in a classroom, one teacher. That's a tough job.
That's all 30 different worlds.
30 different worlds, 30 different personalities, 30 different learning capabilities. Because some kids pick things up like that. Others just need a little bit more focus and attention. That's why, like, I get why they close schools. But people wanted to push it harder. And I'm like, listen, I'm sorry. I can't be for that for this reason. Some kids don't. The kids that do well in school, they're going to do well at home. But the kids that struggle in school, they're going to struggle more at home. So especially here, you have some parents that don't speak English, maybe don't understand what's in front of them, you know, and again, they struggle more. It's going to be harder for them to work remotely. Some of them need to have that teacher there in front of them, to succeed. So everybody has individual needs. So this offers that tailored program like CSU offers that tailored approach. What is it you want to do? What would you like to do? Or you want to finish your high school? Okay, we have the HiSET program here. We'll get you through that. You want to pursue a trade? Oh, we have a collaboration with this person. You know, those options are great. And I think the success has shown itself here with that. You have some kids that are doing well with it. You have some kids that have gone on, moved on, and done well. Because they're just exploring those options. And again, in an environment free from those influences too.
Yes.
You know, because...
And you said it best, you know, giving them options that they don't have to live that gang life, that they can change their life for a future. And providing them that support, that community support, you know.
They get caught into it. Listen, my younger brother who did that long term in prison, you know, he says it to this day. He wasn't, I remember one of the detectives at the time, I was a police officer, very new. He went to my house with the state police trying to see if I knew where he was because he ran off and I'm like, I don't know. If I know, I'll tell you. I'm not going to hide my brother. It's just not me. I was not that one. I'd be the one telling him, come here and I'll bring you in, you know. And he knew my brother from the street. He's like, you know, he was never a disrespectful kid. He was always very respectful. He had a fair life, but it's one of those, he just, you know, there were kids running around the neighborhood. He jumped into that gang life. That's what everybody was doing. That was the trend.
That was the trend.
And he just went along and altercation happened. It went completely south. And he did his time. Completely opposite person now. Like, you want to talk about reform, you know. He just obviously made the change he needed to. And the gang thing was, however brief it was for him, it cost him dearly.
And gangs are a huge thing right now. And I think I would have to say the whole nation. It's back in style. It's back in being.
The sad part is, too, is there's a lot of people my age, like guys I grew up with that were in gangs, they're friends, you know, they're childhood friends. The guys I run into, I see. Some of the first people, like when I became a cop, they're like, you never have to worry about us, you know, like, no, I get that, you know. They are now completely different people, and they're family men, they went through that phase in their life, and they try to educate the younger generation, but sometimes, you know, like all of us were stubborn, this generation can be extra stubborn, because they just don't want to hear it. They're trying to tell them, these are guys that had that experience, right? Listen, I went to jail, I got caught with this, I was stabbed, that was this. Please don't do it. There's nothing that comes from it. And they're still like, I'm going to give it a shot anyway.
And that's what's scary. I've had youth in New York because I was also a family specialist, and I was putting kids away that didn't want to go to school. They had truancy. And a lot of them, there was a program that we would send them to before, you know, when they started getting into trouble with the law. And this was to prevent them from going into jail. No, I can't even think of the program now, but it was basically experiencing going to the jails and talking to the inmates and seeing it from their perspective. And you'll be surprised how many of them were
scared
like...
Street?
Yeah, you know, I think it was... Oh, my God, I can think it was Street something. I can't even think of it now.
Some places offer, but I tell you, some of these kids are just like, whatever. They're just, you know, and again... It takes some more time with some of them.
Definitely.
You know, but I always put that out there when I used to go talk to youth groups and stuff. Like, listen, I came up with a good family, no doubt, you know, and good influences around me, but I still did some dumb stuff. You know, I was arrested.
Yeah.
I was 14. You know, I was like, what the hell am I doing? Like, again, hanging out with the wrong people, doing the wrong things, got caught.
Yeah.
Got caught.
It happens.
You know, nothing was scarier than being downstairs at the police station. And the guys like, call your mother. I'm like, you call her. I don't want to call my mother. Like, I was scared.
Yeah.
It was different back then, too. Yeah. It's one of those. And I remember Captain Kelly, who was a friend of the family at the time, a couple of years already. And he showed up at my house. I lived on Water Street. He showed up. Back then, they had Polaroids for mugshots.
Oh, wow.
And of course, I was home. I was punished, whatever. My mother was nuts. My father just stopped talking to me. I thought he was going to, like, give me a beating, but he didn't. He just stopped talking to me. That hurt more.
Yes.
It did.
He knew the art of discipline.
Oh, he did. He did. He knew how to get me. So, Captain Kelly, maybe he was a sergeant still then or a lieutenant, but knock on the door. I open the door. It's him. He comes in. I'm like, I just put my head down. I was like, he throws the thing up there. He laid into me. I topped him by, your parents worked too hard. Like, every little thing. And then I had to go to court on Monday.
Ooh, yeah.
So it worked out. I ended up doing, it's funny because my brother was a counselor at the same program, and I used to go talk to his crew.
Oh, wow.
And be like, I was here when I was 14 as part of my, probation or whatever community service. And I remember going to the court, and we were always well-dressed. So the lady had asked the captain, what's this kid look like? And he's like, he's going to be the only 14-year-old in court with a suit. Because that's how my father was. We dressed up to go everywhere. We dressed up to travel. And, lady came out. I did my thing. But I always kind of put that out there. So look where I'm at today. Something I always wanted to do. But lapse in judgment, thinking, going with the crowd, thinking I was doing the right thing, hanging out. I got arrested for something stupid.
Yeah.
For something I knew better. I knew better.
Yeah.
And, you're still a young kid. There's still time to change it around.
Mm-hmm. Especially at that age.
Yeah. Just change it around. But listen, you're making mistakes. We all make them. People make mistakes, but if we don't learn from them, then
I think that's the most important part of it, learning from them, if you don't, then
and own it. Please own it. Exactly. Okay, because it's very easy in today's world to always find an excuse or to lean on something. Oh, I was this or I was that. I'm like, okay, I get it. I get some of that, but that is not your excuse.
Because
you're still a very capable person.
Yeah.
So, don't look for an excuse. It'd be like, it was the cop's fault. No, not really. I tell people all the time, I'd rather be, at Dunkin's having my coffee and chilling and not having to deal, but we get called and here we are.
Yeah.
It's one of those, it's like I said, my brother's never blamed the cop. My other younger brother, we talked about it once. He's like, it was Brooksy actually that arrested him. Brooksy was one of my mentors coming into the profession. And he's like, I wasn't mad at Brooksy. He was doing his job. He's like, it was my boy. My boy snitched me out. So he was more upset at his boy. He's like, Brooksy was doing his job,
Now, do you guys get calls ever for parents that are struggling to send their kids to school and the kids don't want to go to school and the police just goes, knocks on the door and be like, hey, get up.
Yeah, no, it's not our role. I mean, I know the school has their truancy thing. And again, a good friend of mine became a sergeant last year. And he's the new supervisor at the SROs, Thomas Carabello. They have their own truancy officers at the school that kind of deal with that. But we do, I remember going to calls, and I was partnered with Tommy for a long time. And, it was always funny when the kids called the cops on their parents. Because I was like, you called the wrong cops. We're not the ones. Hardworking parents. The kids were just being disrespectful, thinking, oh, I'm going to call the cops, because you smacked me.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's not everybody's thing, but guess what? The law allows a certain level of physical discipline.
Corporal punishment, they forget.
They allow it. And again, as long as you're not breaking arms, as long as you're not being negligent,
or using
it's
objects,
a parent's right to do that.
Yeah.
So I remember the very last one, I'll never forget it. It was in May Street. Mother just came home. She's in her scrubs. Nice townhouse, hardworking mom. The girl was so disrespectful. And I'm like, I lose my patience with that. I'm looking at the mom. I'm like, you want to smack her now? Go right ahead. Don't worry about me.
Yeah.
But a lot of parents think I'm setting them up. I'm like, no. It's like, that's your choice.
And they look at you like, huh?
Yeah. If you're not abusing the child, the law allows it. And again, it's not everybody's thing. I'm not saying go out and do it automatic, because if that's not you, that's not you.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to understand, our cultures are like that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it ties people's hands, because I've spoken to many parents that they're like, oh, in DR, this wouldn't happen. Well, in DR, you're allowed to be. And again, not that it's always right, but there's a little bit of fear for that repercussion.
That's
if I do this, I'm going to get spanked.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a person who comes over. Now they all they know about here is, oh, they'll put you in jail if you touch a child. Because that's kind of like what's sent out there. And I try to educate people on it. So listen, you don't have to, but No, like, again, you know, the girl was like, oh, she slapped me. I'm like, and? And she looked at me, she's like, what kind of cop are you? And I lost it at that point. I was like, I'm the type of, I was probably 30 years old at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, I would never talk to my father the way you're talking to your mother right now.
Yes.
And I'm a grown man.
Yeah.
So, I was, again, that's the type of cop I am.
Yes.
We're losing that, you know. And
yes,
we
are.
Got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with the Juvenile Police Academy years ago, we were a lot of Spanish kids, obviously. And I said the word cocotazos.
And
a couple of kids didn't know.
Yeah.
They didn't know what it was. I'm like, what do you mean?
Say.
I said, oh, so your mother gets you and hit you in the head. And one kid's like, oh, they can't hit us. And of course, you know, I'm not over here, like, you know, putting up billboards to hit your kids.
Yeah.
But I had to be like, who told you that? Oh, my counselor said. I was like, well, I hate to say, your counselor's wrong. I says, law allows certain things if you look it up, you know. It was adjusted in 2015.
Yeah,
I believe it was 2015.
You're right on it. Right on it.
And the list in Mass is, like, I always tell people, I lived in New Hampshire for a short while, then I moved back, but I always tell people the list in Mass was, like, maybe, you know, 6 inches long of a paragraph. In New Hampshire, the list is forever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're very, a little more liberal with the disciplining over there. But it's one of those, that's the individual choice. And I don't think me as a police officer, government for that matter, has any right other than investigating abuse, negligence on children. We have to protect them no matter what. I don't have a right to take power away from you as a parent.
That's right.
And I have no right to step in between you and your child,
mm-hmm.
unless the child is in absolute danger.
Of course.
And again, we a lot of us know that. A lot of us in the department come from that culture,
uh-huh.
so it's okay. We know the differences.
Yeah.
But to promote this, you know, put this in these young kids' head that their parents can never do it. They get a little bit more brazen with their parents.
Yeah.
They get a little bit more disrespectful. And a lot of the parents, even ones I've spoken to, that come, you know, from the islands, and it was fine over there. Over here, they're like, oh, no, I can't because I don't want to go to jail.
And they threaten their parents.
So now the parents are afraid of
it.
It's like, we cannot take power away from parents.
No.
I think, you know, as a society, we have to watch that. Yes, we should take care of children as far as making sure that they're not abused.
Mm-hmm.
But we tend to occasionally interfere.
That's right.
In parenting.
Mm-hmm.
That's your decision. That is your child.
I agree.
And it's not putting the kid in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, you know, mentally abusive to the child. And that's your right.
Yes.
You know, that's your right. You made the child. Right? As
they
used to say, right, I brought you into this world, take you out.
Yeah, no,
not that people should go to that extreme, but there's still a level of control that parents need to maintain. And they try. A lot of parents try. It's just sometimes, you know, it certain things don't help along the way,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it emboldens the some of the children, not all.
Mm-hmm.
It emboldens some of them to kind of cross that line or you know,
push
a little bit more, and parents don't know what to do.
And they'll keep pushing and pushing until they hit a wall, you know.
Yeah.
And then at that point, sometimes it's too late because then they're in jail or they're in the system, and it's just...
I know parents that try so hard, and even those that are not people who put hands on their kids,
mm-hmm.
they just, they try to be that strict, you know, you punish or this and that,
uh-huh.
and it's just, the kids are just in that tough,
yeah.
you know...
And it's very tough.
Yeah.
I think you couldn't pay me $1 million right now, and I say that literally to have
yeah.
a child. I'm good, I only have one, and that's one of the reasons, because it's scary to raise a kid nowadays, you know. It's expensive, it's
yeah.
scary from the, you know, disciplinary, you know, actions the parent have to take, the consequences that could lead to, technology, you know, it's just,
parents are in a difficult place, because if you don't do enough, if you do too much, or if they feel you do too much, then it goes south. But if you don't do
mm-hmm.
enough, then you lose it. How?
Having
you know,
that balance.
My comadre said it best one time. Like, you know, her son went through that phase. And
mm-hmm.
great kids. I always told her, I says, your kid's never been disrespectful to me. They're just going through this phase. I've given them plenty of reason. I've always given them a hard time since they were little boys. But she said it best. She's like, you know what? She's like, he's a little older. I'll let him take control of the wheel. But if I see him steering the wrong way, I'm taking it back. So, again, that's a balance that she had to learn, too.
Yes.
Be like, I'm going to let him make his mistakes again, like we said earlier. Let him scrape his knees a few times.
That's right, yeah.
You know, he wanted to move out. I was like, I know what breaks your heart. Let him.
Yeah.
When he finds out how expensive things are, oh, he'll come back real fast.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, you could stay in my house, but there's conditions, there's rules in my house.
Yeah.
You know? So there's conditions as to how you will stay here. You get out of college, come live with me, save your money. But, yeah, it's my house at the end of the day.
it's my rules. And you have to obey by my rules.
And that's society in general. Mm-hmm. It's I don't, you know, unless you're your own boss, and even when you're your own boss, you may have your own company. Who's your boss? The customers. You have to listen to someone sometime in your life. Yes. So don't act as if you don't have to follow rules. There's mm-hmm. rules at home. There are rules at school. There are rules in society. And you, mm-hmm. they're not there for us to like all the time.
That's right. That's you know? Right.
So in my line of work, trust me, we enforce a lot of rules. And they're not always. And we have discretion with some. Others we don't. Yeah. You know, domestics we don't. Mm-hmm. It's just that's the way it is. Unfortunately, sometimes, you know, it's not entirely. But if somebody accuses somebody and then yeah. they're married, you gotta take action.
Definitely. And emotions are so high during domestic violence yes. that people don't. Even with social work, you know, those are some of the most difficult cases you can have is a domestic violence case because it's just, and I tell you that from experience. So last question, yes. any new community service projects coming up that you can share with us? I know you work with us with the little library.
Yeah, that's all your work here. I mean, you guys do phenomenal with that. I just show up and take a picture with you guys, so it's kind of nice. You know, I appreciate
traffic control, you know, a little bit of that.
I appreciate you guys inviting me. I know that the chief appreciates everything you guys are doing. As far as projects, it's tough to roll things off the ground with the COVID.
Yeah.
You know, we did have the open gyms for many years. Just with COVID, you know, we haven't really brought that back. You know, by the time COVID hit, we were up to 5 nights a week that we ran at different schools. We had the old Lawrence High. We
I
had
like
the South Lawrence East, and we had the Gilmet School.
Yeah.
We were doing 5 nights a week. We had, you know, some grant money that paid for some, but then City Council appropriated some funding to expand that. So we had 5 gyms, and we served well over 1,000 kids a week.
Do you guys have, like, in New York, they have what is called, and I provided some referrals to some of my youth that I was working as a family specialist. The Explorador.
Explorers program.
Yes.
Yeah, we, I believe they, again, COVID really set things yeah. back, but we started it long ago, and it was funny, Sergeant Mike Samard, who's overseeing it now, it was him and I who did it way back under Romero.
Okay.
And I found, like, I keep everything. I'm a hoarder when
yeah,
it comes
yeah,
to certain
yeah,
things.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had newspaper articles when we did it way back. Way back then, I gave him everything. But Sergeant Mike Samard will be the guy to contact at the police department. His email will be msamard@lawpd.com. And he's the one that would oversee that. They did, you know, I believe he is working on it now. It's just a matter of getting past all these COVID restrictions.
All right, so any parents out there that's listening to us, please, can you just...
Yeah, so Sergeant Michael Samard, his email is M, his first initial, followed by his last name, S-I-M-A-R-D, at... LAWPD.com. He oversees the Explorers program. We also have, through the school resource school officers, we do a juvenile police academy. And that's every year. Again, there's you know, certain parameters you got to meet for that.
Yeah.
Usually it's good kids.
But it's
school.
Good to get them having that.
But we educate them. Very similar to the Citizens Police Academy, we have a night of defensive tactics. We demonstrate our SWAT team to them. We bring in the narcotics detectives
that
kind of go over that. So it kind of gives them, if they're ever exploring that career, mm-hmm. they kind of get 2 weeks of information.
I love that.
Yeah. So they get to do a lot. And that would be directed at Sergeant Thomas Caraballo. So it's tcaraballo@lawpd.com. for any information you want on the Juvenile Police Academy. Those are high school age kids.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate it, Mr. Ayala, Officer Ayala.
I hope I was able to answer most of that because I know we got
caught up on
the political stuff, and I could go on with that all day.
No, definitely. I suggest we should bring you here. But just to prove our observation about the politics, right now this year we're supposed to have the midterm elections. So it'll be nice just to bring you around that, you know,
I would
in November.
Love to come. Let me know.
And see how it goes, yeah, you know, just to see if we could dissect.
I would love to come just to remind people, just pay attention.
Just pay attention and do your research.
See
yeah.
all the things that they're going to throw out there, the little distractions. Again, like I said to my friend, you ever heard anything about police shooting black people or whatever else?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying it still doesn't happen. It does, but it's not front page of the news. It's not mm-hmm. the first thing you see in the news in the morning.
Yeah.
Because it was pushed for a certain reason during that time.
I agree, yeah.
You know? And again, not negating that, you know, bad things didn't happen. They can happen. There's a margin of error in any profession. Mm-hmm. We can work very hard to fix that, and we are. And we've made, even here alone, we've made plenty of changes. Our training has increased. You know, at the state level, they've made changes where they provided more funding for the MPTC, which offers officers better training.
Yeah.
Because these things change. We're now moving forward, which is great. There's more mental health training, and not so much for our well-being, but how do we deal with people in mental health crisis? Mm-hmm. The department just sent myself and Lieutenant Fleming to a crisis intervention team instructor school. So we'll be eventually soon, we'll be certifying CIT officers.
Yeah.
And these officers that will be trained, that are working the street, responding to calls, mm-hmm. that are going to be trained in how to approach and how to deal with people in mental health crisis.
Yes.
Because we've never had that. And again, we always put the officer's safety first. You have to have that, because we're not asking officers just mm-hmm. go jump in front of the bullet. However, they'll be better trained, well educated, better, we'll give them tools, because mm-hmm. it's a lot of it's scenario based. We run scenarios and how they speak and tone and body language to deal with a person who's going through something like
and
that.
And how to de-escalate so the situation.
So to be able to say, you know what, it's tough to
it's
communicate with
tough.
People going through mental health crisis. So we have to explore mm-hmm. that. And we're reaching that now. Finally, they put some money, you know, with the reform, they put their money where their mouth was, so they threw more money at it.
I love it.
And that's important, because we were never trained in dealing with that. We saw a person that was assaultive. We weren't thinking of their mental state.
Yes.
They're being assaultive.
Yes.
So we addressed it the way we're trained to address any other assaultive person. And then later it all comes out, oh, well, they suffered from so-and-so. It's like, well, we didn't know that.
Yes.
We get there, and this is what happened. So again, you know.
No, it's a very difficult, listen, yeah. I get it, Ms. Officer Alai. I totally get it. And I think the city of Lawrence is very lucky to have you. And we're very grateful that you stopped by today. And we are, you know, hopefully have you back again in November. Just to prove our point, you know, how, you know, the politics and police just come into play very, very closely
my
during election years.
My girlfriend always tells me I should start my own podcast on like, politics. I'm like, no, I don't have
you
time
should.
For that. I don't have time. I have a full-time job. I'd be, look at how long we talked here about it.
Okay? I know, but you know, hey, you never know. You never know. Maybe that's
just,
something
like
that you can do
dialogue.
Once a month.
I think, dialogue is a big thing. And I think, like I said earlier, we need to relearn to agree,
mm-hmm.
you know, agree to disagree. Because
yes.
I think people are just don't want to listen to each other. And
yeah.
we're not all the same.
That's right.
Where there's differences, and you have to, again, people, you have to embrace the differences that we have.
That's right.
Whether they're political, whatever else, ethnic, you know, whatever it is, there are differences that we can learn from.
I grew up in Boston, and I just don't know when that changed at this point. I feel like it changed somewhere. I don't know if it's Generation Z that changed it or what's going on, because I thought that was okay, diversity in arguments, you know, there's not just in race or ethnicity, but
we'll leave with this
point of views.
I saw this somewhere and I love watching stuff, but it's very true, and I reposted it a million times too. Was we had shows like, you know, Archie Bunker's show, The Jeffersons, you know, it's one of those things where people want to say, well, we never had that. Yeah, we did. These shows were on TV and they actually touched a lot of racial mm-hmm. things that were going on in the country.
Yes.
Then.
Yeah.
That existed. It was there. It was there for us to see.
Yes.
You know, you
yes.
saw the differences between Mr. Jefferson and Archie Bunker whenever they did something, and Archie was a certain way and Mr. Jefferson was a certain way.
Yes.
It's like, but they spoke. Like, you see them enjoying a drink together at a function and talking about things and just getting along. It
and
is
they
what
use
it is.
Comedy to break down ice,
yeah,
you know?
It
yeah.
Is, it is.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we need to stop being so offended by everything,
definitely.
Too.
And let's start using the guns out there in the community, too, except for, you know, illegal guns, I should say.
Yeah, no, just in general,
now it's
violence,
not okay
violence,
to,
you know, if you can walk away, walk away. If you can avoid
it. Well, like, let's do an up and up. If you're so angry with each other, it's okay to fight. Like,
get into boxing, man. There's plenty of boxing gyms in the city. Go into the gym, work out. If you want to challenge somebody, do it in the ring. That's fair, and you know what? You live to fight another
day. Have you ever watched? Yes. Have you ever watched the movie Friday? There's a scene.
You live to fight another day.
Yes. Yeah. They don't, you know, and you know, when I was growing up, this is all I need, and it's very clear to me that we're missing some of that
yeah.
right now, especially the young youth are trying, and I've noticed this in New York, where we have the old cats that are the old school cats in jail coming out. Because, you know, now they're recruiting the youth, giving them drugs,
right.
getting them high, and
well,
having them prove it.
Because of their age, they get away with it.
Yes, and having them, you know what, go do this, carry this gun, do this, do that. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, and this was in 2017, 2018 that we were dealing
They've
with.
They've always used it. And even, like, in the 90s when my dad, we used to have to check everybody. The guys would pat frisk everybody going into the club. But they would give their girlfriends the knives.
Oh,
in their
yeah,
purse.
Yes.
So we'd have
right.
the girls
that,
open
that,
their purse.
It's going on right now too.
Yeah.
It's but it's a very scary world. Thank you so much for your service.
Thank you. For
and
having
again,
me.
Thank you for stopping by, and hope to see you in the future.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Lawrence Prospera and is recorded in the multimedia room at the Sisu Center. Nuria Rivera is our host and Paul Thompson our engineer and director, with assistance provided by young adults at the Sisu Center. Technical support provided by Tony Schumann. Our producer is Paul Heithaus. Executive producers are Jay Bartosik, Ralph Guerrero, and the Lawrence Prospera Board of Directors. Thanks to the generous support of the City of Lawrence, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Executive Office of Health and Human Services, and the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Thank you to the New Balance Foundation, the Filene's Foundation, the United Way, the Nordson Foundation, and the Essex County Community Foundation. And a big thank you and shout out to the Maximus Foundation. Without their support, this podcast would not be possible. And lastly, a very special thanks to our guest for sharing their stories with us today.